WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I'm going to get this guy so angry during this segment because I'm going to break out all the tools here that are going to make him want to be a part of the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. It begins on Monday. We're starting at Conrad's. It's brought to you by our friends at Window Nation, our friends at Goodwill, our friends at the Maryland Lottery and the Restaurant Association of Maryland. And I love having this guy on. It's the first time since like we've gotten decent enough to have him on that I would bother him in the middle of the season to bring him onto the Zoom, make him fix his hair all up. He is the longtime voice of all things Rays baseball, but more importantly, don't tell anyone, he's one of us. He is a local product here. I let everybody, I can go wiki you and give all your background and all that stuff. I would just say to you, Andy Freed, welcome home. Welcome home. How's life, my brother?
It is good to hear you. I hear your voice and I feel like I'm home. So that's,
well, that's very kind of you. Is it my Ballmer accent?
It's the Ballmer accent, man. It just, to me, it makes me smile every time I hear it because I've been hearing it since I was a little kid.
I feel like I'm doing it wrong.
No, you're doing it perfect. That's the whole point. I feel like I'm home when I hear you.
Well, often imitated, never duplicated, like Lou Albano once said. The Rays are in, and, you know, we were down there, and, you know, the obvious, there were Oriole fans there. We were in the middle of an Orange Mania when we came down there and the All-Star break and all that stuff. But just in general, I know how much you love baseball. I know how much you love competitive baseball. Had you signed up for the Rays 15 years before you got there, the first dozen years were no fun there. I mean, we watched all of that, right? No offense to Wade Boggs and Fred McGriff, but that era. And you've seen a lot of good baseball in some empty places, some full places, some pennant races, some, you know, really serious baseball teams that you've had there. I know it's nice for you to come home and see beautiful sunshine behind me in the set and say, yeah, we got a relevant team here. You don't want to be 18-1. Maybe you do. You work for the Rays, but the days of being 18-1 against the Orioles are over with for now.
I would think so. I mean, the Orioles certainly look to be an improved team, and it's amazing what a good bullpen can do and make your manager look a heck of a lot smarter. I mean, when the Rays were winning a pennant in 2020, part of the reason why they did that is because when they could have a lead, they'd lock it down with each guy throwing 95 and up, and the Orioles have that now. And it's amazing how they've plucked some guys from different places that you hadn't really heard of that much. Your Felix Bautistas and your CNL Perez's and Brian Baker. And, of course, Jorge Lopez, who probably could have been with a number of teams, but ended up sticking with the Orioles. And it's been a very, very good choice. Now, the question is, will the Orioles get rid of some of the, I don't want to say get rid of, but trade some of these guys? Because the question for the Orioles is the group they have now, the group that it's going to take to win the American League East in sometime within the next couple of years. I think right now is the best time for them to sell some of these, especially bullpen pieces, because they will come at a very high cost. And that's how you go from a team that's gotten good like the Orioles to a team that could be very, very good and win this division at some point in time. I wouldn't have thought that they could make this much headway in this short amount of time. And I lived through 1989, so we know what can happen when you go from one year to the next. But I think in terms of their bullpen, it's good. It's really good. It's got a lot of pieces that could bring back a lot of really good talent positionally and also pitching wise to get them to win the East. Cause when you try to rebuild in the East, there are going to be years that you are going to just have to sit there and eat it. As you mentioned, the 18-1 that the Rays did against the Orioles last year. So I think it's time for the Orioles to trade some of these guys when their value is very, very high. And that's how you can start to climb within the division.
He is Andy Freed. He is our guest. I don't want to be disrespectful to your background or even to our audience who may not know who you are. Our audience that does know knows all of it. Give everybody like your love of baseball because short story long, the Babe Ruth Museum people invited me down a couple weeks ago, Keith Cavanaugh from Terrapin Times. I unearthed when Goose died here, Tony Siragusa died. I had a bunch of pictures and memories, and I was looking for this goofy Christmas CD that he did in Indianapolis that I think it's the only copy on earth. So I'm glad I found it. It took me a lot of looking for it, but in looking for it, I unearthed my Louis Aparicio autographed baseball card collection that I collected as a kid. He signed every one of them in 1986 when we had some beers together when he was here for a 66 reunion. And they were lost for 20 years and they were found. And I felt like a kid again, right? I mean, and this happened at the same time the Orioles go on this crazy winning streak and we're watching games and they're doing things and Rutschman's up. And there's literally for the first time, there's like this heartbeat of promise that has me on the phone with you, right? Like I haven't called you in a couple of years because dude, you're busy. You use your pipes all night. We're 20 and 60 when you get here. I there's not much we can say and nobody's watching the games, right? And I feel it. Everybody's watching again. And I know how much you love it and you love Baltimore and it's come back to me in weird ways the last month. And I know it's never left you, right? Your love of the Orioles baseball.
Without a doubt. A lot of times what I do during when I might have a down moment or on the road is I search on YouTube and look for anything that has Chuck Thompson on it with the Orioles. I hear his voice and I flash back to being 8 years old again and going to Memorial Stadium and hearing his voice for the first time. And we shouldn't forget Bill O'Donnell also, because those two were a pair for what, about 16 years? And they were the Baltimore Orioles.
Who would keep the beer cold? I always wondered. I think it was O'Donnell. I do. I think, you know, when Chuck said, ain't the beer cold, right?
That's
somebody
right.
Had to hand him a beer. I'm thinking, I don't know. I wasn't there. I'll ask some people that might have been there.
They were spectacular together. And my whole goal, Chuck is like my North Star. You know, I look at him and I think of the connection that he made with me as an 8-year-old and kept it through the time I was in college and then as a professional. And I only met the man about maybe 2 or 3 times. But
let me guess, he encouraged you wildly.
Without a doubt, as he did, everyone. He told me some tips about calling football when he did the Colts. He gave me some tips about calling baseball. Of course, he was still doing the Orioles at Camden Yards by that point. And to me, my whole goal in life has been to establish that connection, maybe somehow, some way with some kid somewhere and turn on a switch to make them love the game of baseball. And Chuck Thompson absolutely did that for me. So that's the magic of YouTube. There are a fair amount of his games that are still out there, whether it be on radio or a couple of TV ones. And I'm always searching for them because they give a fire to me. They give an emotional fire to me that is the reason that I'm doing this. And here's the really weird one, Nestor. My broadcast partner and I, Dave Wills, are now doing Rays baseball for the 18th year. Someone mentioned to me, and it hit me like a ton of bricks, that we've now been together longer than Chuck Thompson and Bill O'Donnell were as collective voices of the Orioles. So the fact that we've had some longevity on our side makes me hope against hope that we've established some sort of connection with the audience and hopefully kids somewhere. And our franchise is old enough now where the generation has turned over, where the kids, when we first started, are now parents, 18 years later, that hopefully we can have that sort of connection with our fans for the Rays. And look, the franchise was just an infant when we got here, and it's still relative even to the teams within our own division, still taking baby steps initially. We've gotten to 2 World Series, but it's still at the early, early stages of this franchise. And to think that we might have some sort of effect on instilling a love for baseball in our market, to me, makes me it makes my heart go pitter-patter.
I can tell. Andy Freed's here. His heart goes pitter-patter when the Rays win, which is often enough, certainly, and in the conversation to say, might not catch the Yankees today or this week or this month, but they're going to have to see us in October. And trying to put a team together in that way. And I'll come back to the Orioles with you, but I do want to focus a little bit on your team and where they're going, because as our fortunes go, they all sort of go together. And as the Red Sox lose 28-5 and we all sit here and hold our nose and laugh or whatever, I remember a few parades up there and I got poppied out over the weekend a little bit too, even though I liked David. Dave was very kind to me in my travels with him, but I would just say for the division and for what Toronto thought they were going to do for 5 minutes when Encarnacion and Batista and all that and their promise and where the Orioles were with Buck and all of that, the reset of all of this thing always has the Rays in this and always has them spending less, getting more, flipping over every Carl Crawford and, you know, every pitcher and whoever, CC, whoever there, they move, they go, right? So your take on where we are right now and how the Rays can win the World Series this year, because I think they can.
Well, I'll tell you what. One thing I've learned is that especially in baseball, when they continue to lower the bar for teams to get into postseason, there is much more likely an opportunity for a team to upset. You know, last year to me for the Rays hurt particularly because the Rays were the best team in the American League. They just were last year. year. They won 100 games. They were better than the Yankees, the Red Sox. They were better than all the other teams, except maybe the Astros. I think the Astros certainly were on that short
that
list.
Cheap.
I think
they were the don't top get me two started teams. On that. I'll be going through that for the rest of my life, and I'm sure you never hear that, right?
No, but what hurt so much last year was that the Rays were upset in the first round of the playoffs by, of all teams, the Red Sox. The Rays were better than the Red Sox, and the Red Sox in a short series showed that they manipulated their pitching beautifully. They got just a couple of timely key hits, and their young players played better than the Rays' young players over a four-day span. And you walk away from that series going, my God, we were the better team, and we're done in 4 days? It was the same kind of hurt I had in 79 when I'll go to my grave saying the O's were better than the Pittsburgh Pirates. But for those 3 days, the Pirates came back and they were better in those 3 days. So to me, you don't even have to be the best team anymore. It's great to get playoff positioning, but is that really worth, you know, all that it is for 162 games? To me, and the Rays' philosophy is just get in. Just get in. You may not be the best team over 162, as we're not this year, but you may be the best team over a 4 or 5 day span, and that's all it takes. But, you know, I remember thinking, we won 100 games, and now we're in a series with a team within our division that knows us very well, and we're tied. It's like that massive lead that we had all year is gone. And in a short span, they could be better than us over those next couple of days. So those short series are to me, they're just heart-pounding, and they can be heartbreaking. But you look at a team like the Atlanta Braves last year that didn't even get to 500 until they were 56-56. They were under 500 until that time in early August and won the darn World Series. So to me, it's all about getting in it. And when you get in, you might get hot. You ride a couple of hot pitchers, and then you end up having a parade.
Andy Fried is our guest. He's the voice of the Tampa Rays. He'll be with the Orioles here all week and then onward and upward, but always taking a little piece of Baltimore with him. You know, I love baseball. I hate baseball. You know what I hate baseball the most? When I talk about it, and twice in the same week, they bring up 1979. This is the second time. Barry Bloom brought this up. We had a Blylevin conversation, and every time I see Blylevin, he always takes the ring off, wants me to hold it and stuff. And Grant Jackson was the same thing. God bless, you know, Grant was that way. But, you know, these things do come back to you. Sometimes on bubblegum cards from a high number 1961 Louis Aparicio that you didn't know you owned. And then you start eBaying and going on trying to find the Kellogg 71. But there is a part of being a baseball fan that winning's a part of that at this point and being relevant. And you have a relevant franchise that has a hard time getting traction and people and fans and stadium and Tampa. And I talked to Solons about that the other day, and we can go, it's going to be necessary to save that franchise. And I scratch my head when I watch, we all do, but winning and having a product that people want to come see, they want to come see Adley Rutschman. You pound the ass of a pitcher at the end of a game and do their dance and celebrating and get the last out in the ninth inning. It used to just be the ketchup and the mustard and the relish races, right? I mean, this is what you're selling when your team's playing 3:30 baseball, right? But when you win, all possibilities are there for growth and for really making memories, right? I mean, yeah, this is what it's about when you start to win, is get down to the ballpark and create a night that you remember, like last Saturday night with the Orioles here and the Yankees.
Oh, without a doubt. And by the way, Nestor, don't let 79 still bother. Yes, it does still bother me a little bit, but I had a friend of mine, we were playing, the Rays were playing the Pirates. Oh, goodness. Well, it was at least a dozen or more years ago, because Chuck Tanner was still alive. And there he was roaming around in the press room, grabbing a bite to eat before one of the Rays Pirates games. And a friend of mine was the engineer for us. And he nudges me in the shoulders and he goes, I dare you to go up to Tanner and say, what's it been like wearing Weaver's ring since 79? So I had a thought of doing it, but I just could not do it.
See, you were telling me that you Google Chuck Thompson. In my spare time, when my wife and I are having a bad day and we need to laugh, I don't go to like Don Rickles, although I could, or Johnny Carson. Yeah. I Google Earl Weaver and Bill Haller. Like, there's never a time. I was at that game.
Were you really?
Oh, I was sitting down the first baseline. I mostly sat in section 10 and 11 in the left field bleachers. That's where my dad and I, and the summer 79, I've told this story and it's as true as today's my mother's birthday and my press credential was revoked. So I had it all going on July 26th. But so my dad took me to a lot of games in 1979. My parents lost their son in a drowning and I was sort of a replacement child. My father loved me, took me places, went to Oriole games. We went to 42 games in the summer of 79. We went to 38 regular season games, and my dad struggled to get postseason tickets. I saw the Hoyt game, and I saw game two of the Pirates. I didn't go to game one. I went to game two. So 83, I went to all the games. I was a little older. I was 15, like all of that. My dad was with me in Philadelphia walking out, almost got us killed. Just literally. But in 79, and I mean this, and it's uncanny and it's weird, and I it's a lifetime of a story. I went to 31 straight games at Memorial Stadium, and they didn't lose. The 32nd night, Steve Trout threw a 6-hit shutout. White Sox came in, and I was in the new Ho-Ho Cam. What do they call it? Peoria out in Arizona, yeah. The new Cubs, mm-hmm. Beautiful. And Steve Trout was signing autographs in the little shed. And I went up, he gave me his number, the whole, because I remember that's the greatest game I ever pitched. And I'm like, you know, baseball, you know, only baseball people can remember this stuff. But my dad went to a couple of games that I didn't go to. And they lost. It was kind of, he lost two or three games without me. And I'm like, I'm not going tonight, Dad. We're going to lose, you know? And so 79, that was the summer of Oriole magic. So I would say there's a different star every night, all that. But you, and the Orioles spoke to this a few weeks ago, and you know this vibe. They said it feels like we're going to win every night. Mountcastle was saying that, right? After you win 7 or 8 in a row, you feel like it's like being at a blackjack table on a bender. You're like, I can't lose.
Yeah. Hey, do you know this? This is, here's something that'll knock. Bill Haller is still alive. He is one of the oldest umpires that is still living. We've gotten to be really good friends with Charlie Relliford, who's an umpire supervisor, was a National League umpire for many, many years. Sure. And I brought that up because I'm like you. I watch that Weaver-Haller argument like I read it like it's the Torah, for goodness sake. I mean, I study that thing, and I know it line for line.
Is there a video of Haller talking about it? Like, Haller
there's
talking
not.
Over it would be genius, right?
It would be incredible.
We're always giving me shit the other night. I can only imagine, because it's like the saltiest thing ever, and it's awesome, and everybody I know has seen it. That and the tomato patch with Tom Maher, but that was a whole other – everybody remembers that one too. But I would say that the Weaver thing – I don't know. Weaver, just thoughts of Weaver sort of brighten me. And I don't know that baseball needs people ripping rule books up anymore or kicking bases. I went down to Cuba and I've seen games in Venezuela. It's a little bit more, you know, people whistling and there's all of that. I don't like the fights in baseball. I don't like the headhunting. Yeah. I don't like the unwritten. It's macho-ish for me, but there was some theatrics of baseball as a kid. Vanilla would come out and get after it with an umpire that made it, you know, it was better than the blood of wrestling because you know what I mean? It was a little safer than that, right?
The umpires to this day use that piece of video as how to handle an argument, believe it or not, because they say the body language that Bill Haller used with Earl Weaver that day is textbook perfect. He turns his back and walks away. Weaver has to follow him. He gets a word in, but then lets Weaver be the one to look in the wrong. Now, Weaver went to his grave thinking that Bill Haller baited him. And if you notice, and you were there,
it was within the first couple minutes of the
game.
The sun hadn't set. Murray had his...
Yes.
Flanagan told me stories about that. God bless. When Flanagan was alive, about they all knew. They were all in on it. That's why Murray's literally laughing in his mouth.
Right. It's fabulous. And then the story, too, where Weaver gets by the mound and Flanagan said, you know, Earl, I think I did balk. After all, that's the favorite denouement of that story, is that Flanagan baits Weaver on Earl's way to the dugout.
Oh, man, I could talk to you all day, dude. We could sit here and talk baseball. How do you feel about the game calling it and the shifts and the clocks and the trajectories and the launch? Talk to me about all that nerd stuff that I have zoned out on because, quite frankly, Luke covers the team. He still loves it. They throw me out. I follow it as much as a 53-year-old guy who's been thrown out should follow it. But when the months come back to light and it's there and you want to be a part of it again, it's a different game, right? I mean, if you haven't watched in a while, you haven't watched since Buck, shifts and pitching and gambling, like, and then coming at, like, it's a different product fundamentally than what it was a decade ago.
I don't know if it is fundamentally, but I think it is around the edges a lot.
Strategically, I'm talking about.
Strategically, it is. It absolutely is. Now, a lot of that has come, honestly, from teams like my team. From the race, and they had to figure out ways to succeed within this division. Now, there's a, to me, every time the Rays win a division or or going away. It's like a miracle. There's no way this team should be this successful within this division. When you've got four teams that all have their own TV networks and the Rays don't, and everything is kind of stacked against the Rays monetarily, to be able to figure it out to me is amazing. And the way they've done it is through a lot of this stuff that has now become a little bit more mainstream, because the Rays figured a lot of this stuff out. And then along the way, other teams then try to copy you. And by the way, notice that they, you know, they hire away a lot of the Rays coaches and that sort of thing, because everyone wants to figure out, I don't care how rich you are as an owner, they all want to figure out, how can I win for less? And
market,
that's what the Rays have been able to do.
Right? And that's what it. The book would say, right?
That's it. And with that being said, I don't talk a lot about that stuff on the broadcast, because I think on a broadcast standpoint, it's a little dull in terms of pure statistics and a lot of the modern stats to me.
Yeah, my guy still making $800,000 just struck out Aaron Judge. Woohoo! He's making it, you're right. You know, you give the salaries when you're given the batting averages. Nobody wants that, but we all understand what small market and big market and money and the difference between having leadership and having a bench and having pitching and being able to afford top flight pitching. But I think they've sort of regulated a little bit of that away with the 4 and 5 inning pitcher, that's going to be a market issue. I never understood, big picture, why they ever had closers. Because the minute you said closer, the agent said, pay me 6 times more than before because I have this statistic. I really never understood rotisserie baseball, where people valued saves the same as wins, or the disparagement of wins now, which is, you know, every time I talk wins with Lukey, I sound like somebody's grandfather's grandfather, right? So all of these statistics that have changed to some degree, but the save thing begat relief pitchers making a lot of money. And I think just as they all get together in a room and share information, that pitchers last longer, break less, all of that, like running racehorses every 2 weeks is a bad idea, even though they do it every May.
You know, to me, the game, though, is still beautiful in its own right. To me, you can accept it at a bunch of different levels. You can go knee deep into the nerd stats. And I say that in a loving way, because I think that's how a team like the Rays have been able to get good. I don't think that's particularly entertaining. You go into ballparks now, and there are more stats up around video boards that I find just kind of dull. To me, batting average, home runs, runs batted in are basically as deep as I go. I'll go into stolen bases and strikeouts per inning, perhaps. But to me, I still think that the most exciting part about baseball is the stories. Anything I can do from the broadcast to make the players seem three-dimensional and not two-dimensional stat pages. To me, it's sometimes the most interesting story of the night might be the last guy on the bench that day. But I learned something new about him, and that might make him seem a little bit more human than just an automotron that goes out there and can perform at market value or greater or less. To me, these are three-dimensional people that are playing the game that all have interesting stories to tell. And that's why I fell in love with baseball, not because of weighted on-base percentage and weighted runs created plus. To me, that stuff is very dry. And I'm glad it's there because it helps baseball operations department, but I don't find it particularly entertaining.
I didn't think the racing form was all that interesting. I had to figure it out how to do it the better race. But maybe it's the math in it. And I always loved, my father loved math. So figuring out averages, doing loop leaders. I was the agate clerk at the Evening Sun when you were buying the paper. My name was up top. If you were reading Rosenthal, I put the box scores together every night of my life from the time I was 16 till I was 23. So I'm a nerd about that stuff, but I'm not that much of a nerd about it. And I think for a lot of people in this town, and it's sad that the Orioles aren't family anymore, or part, like they've gone away from all of that with the way it's been run, that the brothers are suing each other famously. It's out. You can go read all the laundry. It's terrible. But there's going to come a point where the team can win again. And when the team wins again, where's the business community? Where are the people? The crime situation in the city and public safety and all these issues that we have here. But the product is still paramount, right? And I think they're on the road to getting that figured out. And that leads me to a point where thinking, how can they grow it a different way? How can some, to your point, kid, experience Oriole magic the way we did in the summer of 79, that our hearts were broken in 80, even though we won 100 games and they won 103, even though our hearts were broken in 81 when we were better in the split season in the front and the second than anybody and didn't even make the playoffs that year. And we came back, got even in 83, came home and rang the victory bell with Joe Altobelli.
And you're missing 82 where they went down to the last day also.
Oh, I forgot that. Heartbreaking as well. Palmer, the picture. I'm sorry. I left that one out. We don't talk about that around here. Other than Sixto Lescano, I have completely eliminated the thought of Harvey's wall bangers, okay?
You know what? God bless them. They needed one too. I mean, I look at the Brewers, and that team was good in the 70s. They were good in 79. Orioles were better. They were good in 80. They were building it. They got to the postseason in 81. And isn't that a great example, though, of a team that finally got to where they wanted to go in 82, and they've never really come close ever since? They've made a couple postseasons, but they've never made it back to the series.
They got cold beer. They got Laverne, Shirley, DeFonz. They got a lot of good things going on there, right? They got the best basketball player in the world, right?
That's right. And when your window opens in baseball, you got to win it or it slams shut for a long, long time.
But not in Tampa, though. That's my point. It doesn't ever shut in Tampa, does it?
Oh, it could. It absolutely. It could tomorrow. Are you kidding? How this team, this Rays team that I've been watching since spring training, is still 8 games above 500, and we've gotten as high as 11 games with our missing our starting catcher, second base, shortstop, center field, and right field. How many teams in baseball could lose those five starters and guys that play every day and superstars within our team? Brandon Lowe hit 39 homers last year, missed most of the year. Zunino, 33 homers, out for the year. Franco, our shining star, out for most of the year. Kiermaier's out for the year. Manuel Margot out until at least September. How they've been able to do it to me is just remarkable. So, and I don't take it for granted for 1 minute, because I've been through the years where this team wore green, and those were some miserable years. But to be able to be a perennial contender, to me, it's borderline miraculous. And look, as much as the game changes, it still comes back to pitching and defense. And the Rays probably do pitching and defense better than most other teams in the league. And that's why we continue to succeed. It's pitching, defense, and the three-run homer. Earl had it all figured out decades ago.
Andy Freed keeping the beer cold in downtown Baltimore. Get yourself in over Michi's and get yourself a proper plate of pasta over in the Harbor East neighborhood. Enjoy your stay here. It must be kind of fun coming back to Baltimore a little bit as a tourist and when loving it, knowing that it's home. It's really nice to spend time with you and see you and visit and laugh a little bit and tell old stories, because I'm getting old. I mean, the old stories are more fun.
We all are. None of us are getting younger. We got to keep the flame of those 70s and 80s Orioles teams alive, because they still mean so much to me. And I'm hoping they do an anniversary for the 83 team next year.
Yeah, I always tell Gary Renicky, you are my guy.
Yeah.
Now, I don't tell Lowenstein he wasn't my guy, but I love Brother Lowe, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, those teams, they had an 83 reunion a couple of years ago. I was involved in that briefly. You know, I've never really met Mike Boddicker, and that would be a little bit of a fun bucket listy kind of thing. Yeah. He was calling games for a little while. Ben McDonald does a great job too, right? So we have a nice broadcast thing going on here with and Ben has a good time out on social media as well. Take care of yourself, Andy. It's always fun visiting with you. Thanks for coming home.
Same with you. Much appreciated.
You do have a Chuck Thompson bobblehead, right? The talks you still have. You have that?
I never got one. I always my wanted friend, one, but I never got one.
My friend, I'm going to look in the back. All right. Because the little Chuck, I used to play it on the air. Because you had to change the battery under it. It said three things. It said, go to war, Miss Agnes. It said, ain't the beer cold. And it said something. I don't know what the third one was. And the Orioles win the World Series. He is Andy Freed. He wants to say, and the Rays win the World Series. He is the Rays broadcaster. He's Baltimore through and through. And welcome back home. I'm Nestor. We are BaltimorePositive.com. Stay with us.